Our next presentation, Machine Telematics, Where Are We on the Curve? Ken Calvert, he is the Director of Product Support Systems with Komatsu. And off-highway telematics have been around for a while. And Ken is going to describe where we are as far as adoption levels in the mining business. So how about a warm welcome for Ken?
Good morning. It's great to see a full house this morning. It's been a privilege for me to be here and to learn from the presenters and get to meet some of you. In the next few minutes, my goal is very simply put, a desire for you to start thinking about an investment that you've already made, probably in most of your companies. For several years now, most of the OEMs, including Komatsu, Caterpillar, John Deere, Volvo, we've been shipping equipment with telematic systems as part of the standard machine package. And the last few years, my job has been to work with our internal partners inside the company and external partners, our distributors and end users, to see if you can benefit from these systems. So my question was, where are you in your use of these investments that you've made? And if we've been at it for about 10 years, that makes it, I think, relatively infant technology. If you think about it, it took 100 years to electrify the world. We've had desktop computers for 30. You've had exposure to this gear for about 10 years, pretty early in the process. I think at this point, probably almost half the users are taking this data actively, passively, and getting some insight into their operations. So I've got three case studies, best practices, people along this adoption curve to share with you. And I've classified them into security seekers, money savers, and money makers, with guys using these systems at the highest level of adoption to improve their operations to become more profitable. I think the base case for a lot of these systems was a thought that people wanted to feel more secure about their gear. Are the machines where they should be? You all in your mining pits and underground operations, you know where your machines are. Are the machines being used in a safe way, the way you intended them to be used? And are they healthy? Are they showing any abnormality codes? This kind of was the base case, I think, for putting these systems on the machines. I want to use Komatsu as the case study for a security seeker. How we use this system, Comtrax is our system, to kind of answer those questions for us, and maybe also give you some insight into how a manufacturer can benefit from putting this gear on the machines. So 2 years ago, we put Komatsu's first Tier 4 technology in the world into the North American marketplace. These engines, as everybody knows, had a lot of extra bits on them. And as much as you can try to figure out what kind of problems you're going to have pre-production, pre-shipment, no manufacturer can figure out ways to use equipment and not to use equipment as much as the collective user group can. So we put these machines in the field, and if we looked at our functional spec, we wanted them to work in a way that the operator wasn't using or aware that there was a lot of new hardware and a lot of new technology on these machines. Many of our machines go into rental applications. You cannot expect a rental operator to be trained on every piece of equipment. And if the operator had to be really engaged with this technology, we knew we were going to have problems. We wanted the engines to be as responsive and to perform just as well as the pre-Tier 4 engines went. As you guys all know through your pocketbooks, all this extra hardware is expensive. So we thought, if you're going to have to buy this stuff, there should at least be a payback for you that the new engines are more efficient than the old engines. Make sense? And finally, you don't want to sell anything that doesn't live and work in the field. So we kind of knew what we wanted to accomplish before we shipped the first machine. And in any kind of a project or improvement, knowing what you want to measure is step one. So, as I said, we've been at Comtrax for, in this marketplace, about 6 years. The level three system, prior to tier four, didn't measure the things we needed to measure to support the functional specs and the goals of the tier four technology. So, we needed to make some improvements in Comtrax to be able to make sure that the machines we were shipping were performing as they were supposed to. And the strategy for getting these machines into the marketplace with no problems for you all was a very simple one. The more eyes on the machines, the greater our probability of catching problems early, fixing them, and shipping you the kind of machines and gear you expect. So, we went into our first Tier 4 machines. We've got 7,000 of these running in North America now. With a strategy, let's put as many eyes on the technology as we can. Let's get the Comtrax data to everyone, so if there's any problems at all, they're going to raise up. And we signed up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people for email alerts, including engineers in Japan, our local QC staff, the first owners of the Tier 4 machines, our distributors. So if there were any problems, we'd find out about them. So we had a goal. We found a way to measure it. And we measured. And I don't want this to sound like a Komatsu commercial, because I really think this is a behavior you expect from all your manufacturers. But simply, non-intrusive technology. In this technology, active regeneration by all the manufacturers is kind of defined as if fuel is being dosed into the DPF. On this system, this happens around 1.5% to 2% of the time. So in an 8-hour day, the active regeneration goes on about 8 minutes. So we thought we hit that non-intrusive technology, and all this happens without any operator involvement, and he doesn't hear any change in the sound of the machine or the way it feels. No loss of power. We think we got this one because we didn't hear that we didn't. Whether the machines are doing and working like they should and respond the way they should, that's all judged by you. But we think if we didn't do that, we would have heard otherwise. Fuel economy, 7% better than Tier 3, and that more than pencils for the increased cost of the technology. And finally, is the hardware getting out there, living, doing what it should? 99% of the fleet, and I said we're at 7,000 machines, 3 million operating hours, we're at a 99.5% original gear still in the field rate. So we think we did okay. And case one, we needed the security to know that our product was doing what it was designed to do. Case two, the money savers. And this has been reducing unnecessary idle time has been something that I think many, many people are advocating throughout your companies, throughout the industry, by all the OEMs. We've simplified it. We tell our owners of machines, idling is not productive. It wastes fuel, and it runs up hours. And it's not good for the new modern diesel engine. Does anybody disagree with this? Nah. Matter of fact, this is a 2-foot by 3-foot poster that if any of you guys want for your shops, leave me a business card or something, we'll send it out to you. Just as a reminder to folks. And as I've sat through presentations and made presentations about unnecessary idle time, it's a buildup of costs, right? This pie chart is for a 40-ton excavator, so these chairs of the pies would be a little bit different on a production mining-size piece of gear, but that's the cost of the operator as a percentage of the hourly cost of running the machine. This is depreciation. This is fuel. This is repair costs. Most of these machines don't go through major overhaul, so these pieces of the pie would change as the machines get bigger. But how many of these costs would be reduced by reducing idle time? You'd argue that a lot of them would, I think, right? So everybody gets it. Let me show you our data. This is all the 40,000 Komatsu Comtrax machines across North America. Most everybody buys into the argument of lowering idle time, but the reality, and this is a long-term trend line, these spikes and these valleys are the seasonal variations in idle time. And if you can't read these numbers, that's 32%, and that's 40%. And as you can see, the long-term trend line is idle time is going up. So we think we're educating. We know you're educating. We're talking about this. The only thing we can kind of hypothesize is that this is some new tolerance to a new reality that fuel's more expensive than it used to be. When fuel prices spiked, we saw an initial drop-off in idle time. People got interested. And now, as we've all accepted those costs into our business, maybe we've just got more tolerant of higher fuel costs, and it's kind of back to business as usual. Anybody surprised by this? How many of you have been educating about eliminating unnecessary idle time? Some of you, thanks. This is a case study from an individual customer of ours. 41 Comtrax units, most of them were 8-yard loaders. If anything, this is a case study in persistence. This was a customer highly interested in eliminating unnecessary idle time. One thing that was a bit different about this guy, he's a 24/7 winter operation. So he's kind of got a hill to climb to start with, right? And his local Komatsu dealer was very involved in all this simply because he wanted to keep the guy as a customer. The first thing they did is they upgraded his machines so that they all would report idle time. And they started training. They created a manual scorecard, regular scheduled meetings on idle time, that feedback. This things that somebody was doing manually, playing with Excel, got automated. The customer reinvigorated his efforts. Here was his baseline, 50% idle time. His machines were averaging 172 productive working hours a month. Here was his delta. He went from the 50% idle time to 32% idle time, increased the number of working hours on the machine while lowering the overall monthly working hours on the machine. If you pull out your calculators, this 41-unit fleet, when he got it to this area, started behaving like a 54-unit fleet. Pretty good case study, right? Took a long time. He has to stay involved to keep the numbers low. So we thought, who's got 3 years per customer to try to affect eliminating idle time? Not many of us. So we thought, is it possible to scale this effort, to take what we learned from this one case study and expand it to a large group of customers? So last spring, we initiated what we called a no-idling program. We asked our local Komatsu distributors. Did any of you guys participate in this? Were offered this program? We asked our Komatsu dealer to sign up his local customers. And if you signed up, you received some educational materials to share with your operators, some promotional materials, and you got this automated scorecard that came from the previous case study. All these promotional materials were focused at the operator. We believe that the operator is the boss of that machine, that he wants to do a good job, and he wants to operate that machine in a way that's going to keep it living long and healthy. We also sent out educational materials. This is a 6-minute narrated script that just told the guy, turn the machine off at lunch. We wanted everything to be actionable. Avoid idling more than 5 minutes. Limit cool down periods. All variable by whatever you guys do in your local operations. We also told him that the modern diesel engine is different from the other diesel engines, and idling is not good for these. This is that automated scorecard that the participants got in this. They got a monthly fleet average of idle time, goals set individually by the customer. So how did we do? We got a lot of takers for this program. There's 1,200 fleets signed up, 7,000 plus machines, and 350 of the customers improved. What do you think? That's pretty good? We don't know. We're glad some guys improved. But if we took those 350 guys out of it and we looked at the remainder of the guys that participated in the program that didn't improve, that's the red line. And the blue line are the machines that weren't in the program. There was absolutely no improvement at all. So the 350 customers that improved lowered the idle time for everybody, and the other 800 got worse or stayed the same. And we think about it, short program, about a 30% success ratio, maybe not too bad. You should be asking yourselves one question now. What's the difference between these guys that got better and these guys that didn't? And this is another one of the posters. Not that I'm here to push posters this morning. But we thought the difference was some of the companies took it seriously, set the materials out to their sites, got their site people involved, got their operators involved, and that it was the leadership that made it happen, which has been a reoccurring theme in this whole week's program, right? Change starts with leadership. So I want to give you one last thought about idle time that we've amassed lots and lots of cost data on operating costs, depreciation, resale values, and as we looked across the Komatsu-sized fleets from little machines to big machines, really simple rule of thumb. Anytime you walk through your operations and you're looking around, what does idle time cost you? It's 10 cents an hour of horsepower. That's pretty close. The lawnmower in your backyard, you let it run for... You'll have to take a Ziploc and tie the handle up to let it run, but you let it run for an hour, about 50 cents. A 20-ton excavator, about $20 an hour. A 1,000-horsepower haul truck, about $100. That's what idle time costs. You can you know the total horsepower in your fleet. You can do a pretty quick explanation. You want to use it in a safety share, pretty simple. Finally, those are the money savers. I don't think any of you guys are in business to save money. You're in business to make money, right? You can save all the money, just park your whole fleet, you won't spend any more. So this is probably a case study from our most sophisticated adopter of this technology. It was a thermal met coal producer in the southeast. Not a big operation, 100-ton trucks, but not a small operation either. He ran two shifts. The operation manager had a very, very simple question he wanted to answer. What's a good day's production? He knew what a good day was for his mines, what a good day's production, because he knew his best every day, his average day. He had lots and lots of data. But what got him to challenge his thinking about a good day's production was he started looking at the payload meter data, the haul truck data on the individual units. And to his surprise, he saw a lot of variation truck by truck at his mine site. Am I doing okay for time, Steve? Pardon me? Okay. The number of loads the machines were carrying every day and the average loads varied tremendously, unit to unit, shift to shift. And he thought, he was surprised by the variation in the trucks, the individual trucks. And he started to rethink what a good day's production should be. Why isn't there more consistency in what the trucks are carrying and how many times they carry it? He didn't have the data to answer that question, so he got involved with a local software guy to take a deeper dive into the data, and he enhanced the system's reporting capability so that he could report by shift, by operator, so that now he had names to attach to the number of cycles carried every day and the loads carried by every truck. And what he found out, and he wanted to be very, very careful as he was communicating a message, because the last thing he wanted to do was tell guys to speed up and maybe cause them to be less safe. So he wanted to be very careful in his messaging to improve his operations. And he said, you know, we don't always load the trucks consistently. Let's take the time to load the trucks consistently, and let's keep the trucks on the job. So let's get a more consistent load. Let's get a more consistent number of loads carried per shift. Pretty simple stuff. But now he had some report, some ways to measure it. He had the insight to do this from the initial data. And what he ended up with was a little bit of improvement in the average carry, a lot of improvement in the daily haul loads. And his speculation is once he knew, the guys knew that this was being measured, that they just stayed more consistently in the job. And finally, all this added up to a 20% overall improvement. During this improvement time, his business also got very, very busy, which it's easy to get more efficient when you're busy, right? So that's kind of that. The common elements, and we do all want you to benefit from these systems, all the manufacturers. All of these had management champions, all the guys that succeeded. They had a clear direction of where they wanted to go, and they just used telematics as a tool. That's pretty much my message today. So, where are you using this data? Maybe you're way beyond all this. And any questions or comments?
Yeah, you said before, you know, you have to somehow weigh, you know, how long you idle or what is a good time, you know, when it makes sense to switch off the engine and turn it back on again, right? I guess, is there a rule? I mean, if it's parked and being loaded, I think we are talking several minutes. But let's just say it is, you know, only for whatever reason, parked for 30 seconds. You know, is that already enough, or where would you draw the border?
Most of us, and so many people have an idle policy that their local idle policies always trump our thinking on how long you should idle before you shut off the engine. But our kind of rule of thumb number is 5 minutes. And that can vary a lot on application and safety and many, many factors. Let's say your idle policy would put your idle number at 50%. Let's say your idle policy in a perfect world would account for about 30% of your idle time, and your fleet was idling 40%, then your area for improvement would be that 10% that's kind of in excess of your local idle policies. The machines idle a lot. Interestingly, the machine that you would think would idle the least is the dozer, the crawler dozer. What can a crawler dozer do if it's not moving? And they idle just as much as everything else. We kind of believe that from not just data, but from talking to people, that idle is behavior.
Would you see some demand for a technology, you know, similar to, let's say, the cars they have that right now in Germany, for instance, where you are stopping at the intersection and the engine turns off and then you put your feet on the gas pedal and it turns on again? Would you see a demand for something like that in mining?
I'd let the guys that buy the equipment decide that for me.
There's a company in Denver right now that has that technology, Walter, and it's deployed at Usabelli Coal in Alaska. They're actually working on that right now.
Yeah, I really like the curve that showed idle time was trending upwards since 2007. I was just curious, what's the source of that data?
It was our 40,000 machines across North America. So we think it's a very relevant statistic, that's viable enough to represent reality in the industry.
Is that it? Okay.
Hey, thank you much.
Thanks.